This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Reports on Wednesday state the ousted former president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, has been moved from house arrest to federal prison.
And that's reporter Naba Mohideen speaking from the Sudanese capital. Also, the UN envoy to Libya is calling for a ceasefire after heavy shelling of civilian areas. 150 people are missing after a boat capsized in the DRC. And the military chief in Algeria says all options are on the table amid ongoing protests. And we'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead here on Africa News Tonight. In our top story at this hour, reports citing relatives of former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir say the ousted leader has been moved from house arrest to prison. But protesters who are demanding civilian leadership instead of the transitional military council are skeptical. Naba Mohideen reports from Khartoum.
Reports on Wednesday state the ousted former president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, has been moved from house arrest to federal prison. Unnamed members of Bashir's family told Reuters news agency, the BBC, and others he was moved to Kabir prison in Khartoum late Tuesday, while prison guards told CNN they saw Bashir's arrival at the facility. Kabir prison is where Bashir locked up many of his opponents during his 3 decades in power. But some of the thousands of protesters remaining camped outside the defense ministry since last Thursday coup are skeptical. Protester Abu Bakr Ali says there should be proof that the former president was arrested. He says he doesn't believe that Bashir is in prison, and even if he's in prison, they want a trial for Bashir and his people. The Sudanese Professional Association, the main protest group, also voiced doubts. Muhammad Abbas is with the SPA. He said the news remains unconfirmed unless the military council announces it in a press conference. People in the streets and the sit-in are demanding to see photos of the arrest on national TV as well, at Abbas. A well-placed source told VOA Wednesday the reports of Bashir's move to the prison were not true and that he was still being held under house arrest. The protesters have been demanding a return to civilian rule since the military announced Bashir was moved from power and a council would rule Sudan for 2 years before elections. Protesters and the international community are pressing the military for a quicker return to civilian government. The African Union on Monday threatened to freeze Sudan's membership if they don't return civilian rule within 2 weeks. The European Union echoed that sentiment on Tuesday, refusing to recognize Sudan's military council and arguing a civilian transitional government. But not all protest groups are demanding the military be sidelined. Sudan's Gathering of Unionists in Opposition Party said it would be happy if the military council simply included civilians. Hashim Babikir is a spokesman of the party. He says their vision in the party is to form a presidential council with civilians, but they don't mind the military representation as well to protect the demands of the revolution. The SBA called for bigger protests in Sudan starting Thursday until the military council hands over power to an elected and qualified civilian government. Sudan's protests erupted in December over fuel and food shortages, then quickly escalated to massive street protests calling for Bashir to step down. Naba Mohideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
Uganda says it will consider giving asylum to Sudan's former president after his ouster last week. But a Ugandan human rights activist says the offer is an insult to people who suffered the atrocities at the hands of the Bashir government. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Okello Riem, Uganda's State Minister for Foreign Affairs, said Tuesday that Uganda might take in Sudan's ousted president.
If President Omar Bashir applies for asylum in Uganda, that is a matter that can be considered by the President of Uganda.
Oriem, speaking Wednesday to VOA, said Uganda will not be apologetic to anybody if Bashir decided to come to the country. He also said Uganda does not recognize the International Criminal Court, or ICC, which in 2009 issued a warrant for Bashir's arrest on charges of war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide in Sudan's Darfur region. The head of the International Center for Transitional Justice in Uganda, Sarah Kasande, says Oriem's statement is regrettable and an insult to Bashir's victims. Kasande notes Uganda ratified the Rome Statute, which established the ICC, and says Uganda is legally obliged to arrest and surrender Bashir should he enter the country. But, she stresses, the 1951 Refugee Convention, which Uganda also signed, does not allow Bashir enter the country.
Article 1F, it clearly excludes persons who are accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity from being granted asylum or refugee status. The same provision is contained in our Refugee Act. Section 5 disqualifies persons who are accused of such heinous crimes from benefiting from asylum.
If anything, Kasanda believes Uganda should prosecute Bashir, who it once accused of backing Lord's Resistance Army rebel leader Joseph Kony. The LRA killed tens of thousands in northern Uganda before moving westward into Congo.
They still have an obligation to prosecute him. How and whether they'll do that is another matter. But either way, he should face justice. But also, I find it quite disturbing that Uganda would dangle asylum to Bashir. He hasn't asked for asylum from Uganda. It is upon the people of Sudan to determine what happens to the fate of their ex-dictator.
For the time being, Bashir is reportedly being held at a maximum security prison after initially being put under house arrest. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Meanwhile, pressure is mounting on the military council in Sudan to move quickly to a civilian transition. Amar Yusuf, leader of the Sudanese Professionals Association, which has been a driving force in the protest movement, stressed that a sit-in is the only guarantee to meet the public's demands. Those include a transitional civilian government and the abolition of laws restricting freedoms. The African Union has threatened to suspend Sudan's membership if the military council doesn't transfer power to a civilian government within 2 weeks. The UN has appointed a new envoy to work with the African Union on mediating an end to the crisis. Paul Nantulia is an analyst and researcher at the National Defense University's Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about whether that kind of pressure would yield a civilian government to lead the transition.
It depends on a number of things. One, the African Union is trying to enforce a long-standing policy that is intolerant to what they call unconstitutional changes of government. And so this would constitute one such change. Secondly, the success will depend on how united and how much consensus the rest of the international community is able to bring to bear. The other influencing factor will be the calculations that the military leadership will play itself. Now, indications are that the Sudanese armed forces, as currently structured, certainly at the leadership level, is not united. There are factions, you know, that are vying for power within the military, and the military as an institution is not completely decided 100% on which way Sudan should go. The third dynamic, of course, will be the protesters on the ground and the ability of the Sudan Professionals Association, together with its coalitions around the country, to apply political pressure to basically push the parties forward around this goal that they have articulated, which is that the power must transfer to civilian authority.
The Sudanese Association of Professionals called for disbanding the military council and form a civilian transitional council. Is that a possible scenario?
It could. It is a scenario. It's important to note that the Sudan Professionals Association is not an organization that emerged last night or last week. They've been around for some time. And some of their members were involved in previous peaceful insurrections against military governments. We had a process in 1985 that removed Jafar Nimeiri. We had a process in 1964 that removed the government of General Aboud. So what the SPA coalitions have said is that they are rooted, they remember that experience. Secondly, we have seen them lead the trade union movement for many, 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 many years. And one of the decisions they took in 2010 and 2011 is that they would organize professionals, they would organize across interfaith lines, they would organize across the trade union movement, they would organize across the broader structures of civil society to be able to craft a vision of what a democratic Sudan should look like. They have put forward this vision. They have transitional proposals and documents that they've been working on for many, many, many years. These protesters are not rioting because they want food. They're rioting because they want to implement a vision for democracy in the Sudan that they have held for many, many years. One can argue going all the way back to 1964. So it's important to understand the organic roots of this movement and to understand the kind of transition that they're calling for.
Is there any chance that the deep state in Sudan would win and repeat the same Egyptian scenario?
It's a possibility. The military could decide to hang on, or sections of the military could decide to hang on because it's by no means cohesive. It could yield to the demands of the SPA and its coalitions, or the SPA and the military could meet each other halfway. The African Union may come in and facilitate a transition that might look a little bit different. We don't know. But what is important is that they have studied the Egyptian process. They have studied the Tunisian process. This is in their literature. And they have studied their own process, the process in Sudan. And what they have said is that they are not going to let up the pressure until and unless a momentum is generated for all the different parties, including the military. And I think it's very important to understand that there's a role for the military, and they've made it very clear that they would like the military to be involved in this transition, but they want the military to play a role that sees it protect and safeguard and secure an environment that is conducive to be able to produce a meaningful transition. So they're trying to craft a vision of the Sudan, a vision of diversity, a vision of inclusivity, and that's the reason why they've decided to remain on the streets to advance their demands. They've made their demands very clear, and I think this is something that we need to watch. It could be very significant for the African continent.
And that was Paul Nantulia from the National Defense University's Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking there to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Four people are confirmed dead and 150 others are missing after a boat sank on Lake Kivu in the Democratic Republic of Congo. 35 people were rescued in the incident Monday night as the boat was traveling from North Kivu province to the city of Goma. President Felix Tshisekedi says in a Twitter post that officials will identify and punish those who are responsible. Overcrowding on boats is common in the area. UN envoy Hassan Salameh has urged an immediate ceasefire in Libya after what he called a horrible night of random shelling of residential areas in Tripoli. Libyan officials say at least 7 people were killed and 26 wounded in the Abu Salim district near a main point of entry into the city of about 2.5 million people. Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army launched an assault on the capital 2 weeks ago, but they've been bogged down in the suburbs by the UN-backed government in Tripoli and allied militias. Haftar has gained some international support by claiming he's planning to root out Islamist extremists. The Tripoli government says that's a guise for a coup. The fighting broke out just before a planned international conference held to set up elections in Libya. And it's 18 past the hour. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on The Voice of America. This week marks 5 years since Boko Haram militants kidnapped hundreds of Nigerian schoolgirls in the village of Chibok. The kidnappings spread fear across the border in Cameroon, where hundreds of schools closed. Now, authorities have since ordered schools to reopen, but many students and teachers refuse to return. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Ashigachie on Cameroon's border with Nigeria.
Hundreds of children play at a government primary school in Ashigachie on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Cameroon's Ministry of Basic Education invited the children and their parents to the school to convince them Boko Haram is almost defeated and the schools are now safe. The ministry's delegation head, Gilbert Wanyu, says security measures have been taken to protect schools.
You don't get into the school without thorough search. We must identify you to know who's in the campus. Inside the campus, we don't bring the students together like we used to do in the yesteryears for morning assembly and so on and so forth.
Boko Haram's abduction 5 years ago of 276 schoolgirls in Nigeria's Chibok, in addition to local attacks and school burnings, caused many parents in Cameroon to pull their children from school. The Ashigashia school had 3,000 children in 2014, but that number dropped to 400. 17-year-old Ali Mamuda says he will never return there to study. Boko Haram kidnapped him from school 4 years ago, and he was kept captive for 2 years before Cameroon's military freed him. He says he will never go back to the school because he is a living witness of Boko Haram brutality simply because he defied their demand to stop going to school. Mamuda says he is not sure anyone is safe at the border school and does not wish his friends to be victims of Boko Haram as he was by going there. Teacher Etienne Mainimo was transferred to a border school but says he decided to remain in a safer area after Boko Haram fighters killed his peers. He laments that kids are being deprived of an education.
If nothing is done, I want to tell you that the future of the children who are the leaders of tomorrow is really in great danger because very few of them are going to school.
The government of Cameroon says it needs to construct at least 7,000 classrooms to replace those torched by Boko Haram. The governor of Cameroon's far north region, Midjiyawa Bakari, says hundreds of teachers and staff refuse to resume work. He has documented the names of about 1,000 staff who have been absent for 2 to 3 years but are still receiving salaries, says Bakari. He will forward them to the ministries of public service and finance for sanctions, he says. Bakari says he is calling on parents to secure their children's future by making sure they go to school. But parents fear Boko Haram supporters are still operating in the area. Boko Haram extended its attacks from Nigeria to Cameroon in 2013 after Cameroonian troops began assisting the Nigerian military in fighting the extremists. Cameroon estimates more than 1,500 of its citizens have been killed in the fight against Boko Haram and more than 45,000 students displaced in northern areas. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ashigashia, Cameroon.
Further afield, Algeria's military chief has urged patience from protesters who have continued to hit the streets after President Abdelaziz Bouteflika resigned 2 weeks ago. Emboldened by Bouteflika's departure after he announced plans to seek a fourth term in office, the protesters want a break from the past and haven't been happy with the appointment of interim president Abdelkader Benzallah. Late yesterday, the ongoing protests led to the resignation of the head of the Constitutional Council. Benzallah appointed a replacement today. General Ahmed Gaid Salah, the chief of staff of the powerful military, said today that all options are open on how to move forward. He said some parties are not happy with, as he put it, the peaceful protests and are trying to disrupt the transition. Elections to choose a new president there are scheduled for July 4th. Nigeria's Center for Disease Control says 60 new cases of Lassa fever have been confirmed in the country. At least 121 people have died from the disease since January. Mike Mbonye has more from Lagos.
The 16 new cases confirmed in 5 states has brought the number of confirmed cases to 526, out of the 2,034 suspected cases, Lassa fever is caused by the Lassa virus, which comes from excrement of rodents. Many of those infected by the virus do not develop symptoms. When symptoms occur, they typically include fever, weakness, headaches, vomiting, and muscle pains. Dr. Chikwe Ihekwazu, the Chief Executive Officer of the Nigeria Center for Disease Control, says 17 healthcare workers have been affected in 7 states since the outbreak of the disease. He says 6,489 people suspected to have contacts with those infected have been identified in 20 states. Professor Adebayo Onojole is a specialist in community and public health, College of Medicine, University of Lagos.
The new cases reported is showing a failure of control of our communicable disease processes. But then it's not unexpected, because in the case of Lassa fever tends to mimic so many other common disease conditions, most especially fever weaknesses. The index of suspicion gets that high and diagnosis is made. Most of the time, they are more at the severe cases. And when they are severe, what does it imply? Prognosis may be poor, and that may be why we are reporting these new cases of death.
Onojole says that multi-level methods should be used to check the spread of the disease.
The way out is at multi-levels. We have the level at the individual level. The individual level is that we must be conscious about our food hygiene processes. That every individual must take responsibility in protecting the food that is consumed. We also have at the community level. Community must maintain good environmental sanitation that reduce the proliferation of vermin which spread this disease condition.
Dr. Ezekiel Oridota is a senior lecturer in the Department of Community Health at the University of Lagos College of Medicine. He says there should be an education campaign to alert communities about the dangers of the disease.
The community is like an incubator for some of these diseases, because everything that these diseases need for them to really come up is there in the community. So we need to tackle it. We need to look at things that makes some of these diseases to flourish in our community. The leadership of the community, the people in the community, is the job of all the stakeholders in the community. We all need to come together, support the health people, give information when necessary. And I think with that, with us doing the right thing, we can really handle this problem.
Oridota says that regular washing of the hands can help prevent some communicable diseases. The Center for Disease Control says 4,983 people who had come in contact with victims of the disease have completed the mandatory 21 days of follow-up and declared symptom-free. This is Mike Imbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. That's coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has made headlines for pushing through unprecedented reforms. But many challenges lie ahead in creating a national consensus. Discussing Ethiopia's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.